All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the April 6, 2022 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Ryan. Hardesty.
Here.
Max.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public may provide written testimony to the Council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. And one can also email the council clerk at councilclerk@portlandoregon.gov with any other types of questions. We'll hear from legal counsel now on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
And all right, thank you. This afternoon, we only have one item on our agenda. Keelan, item number 255, please.
Accept Portland's Housing Bond Oversight Committee 2021 progress report.
Thank you. We get to hear the progress we've made on some of our investments in affordable housing. I'll turn this over to Commissioner Ryan. Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. And thank you to our Bond Oversight Committee members for their time, their effort, their expertise they bring to the oversight of Portland's housing bond. Your report ensures the city is investing bonds funds in ways that Portland voters intended and what property taxpayers deserve. Thank you, Portlanders. Members of the Bond Oversight Committee will present the 2021 progress report for Portland's housing bond. Council will also hear from some of Portland Housing Bureau's project partners whose work exemplifies the goals and achievements of the Portland housing bond. And at this time, I will turn it over to Director Callahan to present and introduce our friend twice in one day. So what an honor, Alan. Alan Lazo, the director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Take it away, Director Callahan, or is it directly to you, Alan?
I think, good afternoon. This is Tanya Wolfersberger. She, her pronouns. I'm a program coordinator here at the Housing Bureau. I'm gonna kick things off here this afternoon. Thank you for having us. Keelan, if you could share the slides that we provided, that would be great. Thank you. So as I said, I'm Tanya Wolfersberger. I'm a program coordinator here at the Housing Bureau, and I'm joined today by our Bond Oversight Committee to present their 2021 progress report. The Bond Oversight Committee is composed of up to 5 community members that have been appointed by City Council. Our current members include our chair, Todd Strubel, our vice chair, who you've seen earlier today, Alan Lazo, and at-large members, Susan Emmons and Annalisa Curler. These committee members convene quarterly to oversee implementation of Portland's housing bond. The primary areas of their oversight include ensuring adherence to the goals and priorities of the bond policy framework, creating community through public engagement, and financial accountability. And now I'm pleased to introduce our Vice Chair, Alan Lazo, to begin the committee's report.
Thank you, Tanya. And good afternoon again, all. It's so great to see you. What a big housing day. So I'm going to switch hats a little bit here. But just for the record, again, I'm Alan Lazo. I'm the executive director at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. I'm also a member of the Portland Housing Bureau's Affordable Housing Bond Measure Oversight Committee. So as we'll outline in this report to council, the Bond Oversight Committee is responsible for reviewing progress in three main areas of oversight around bond expenditures. The first is monitoring how those bond activities and investments adhere to the goals of the bond policy framework. And to me, that is one of the really important pieces of the work we do, because that framework really was set out in a community-rooted process very early on. And so it's been really amazing to watch the progress of this, now what is it, 4 or 5 years later, to really see. And when we get to look at some of these pieces later on, it's been really, really amazing to see how it has evolved over that time. As Tanya mentioned, we meet quarterly and we review the progress that's made on the different projects that have been awarded bond funds through the bond. Things like a number of units that are completed or in progress, and the extent to which those that progress is on track to meet the goals of the bond and of the individual projects. This table or this graph that you see here summarizes the overall housing production progress that was made in the last year that this report covers. So the key one here in the, I guess that's a teal color or bluish color, shows that two of the existing projects, the Ellington and East Burnside, have produced units, and that there are 10 bond projects that have been awarded bond funds in 2019 that continue to be in progress. So by continuing to keep watch over the progress of these projects, we've been able to strategize how to further invest remaining funds within the, as we come closer to the end of the 5 to 7 year implementation timeframe approved by voters. And of course, it's a complicated juggling act to figure out, you know, what funds are left, how to get those invested, where to get them invested, as it also continues to be a moving target with increasing production costs, all those different factors. So really an amazing work by the Housing Bureau folks to kind of keep track of all that and making sure that we have the capacity to see what's happening with the different funds and the projects. So the next slide, Tanya, this is one of those really amazing things for me to see, having gone from that framework committee several years ago to now seeing a map of where projects are to be located. You know, in addition, again, to following just the progress of the production goals, we've been reviewing where new units are being or will be created, again, to ensure that they meet the intent of, as we talked about this morning in celebrating Fair Housing Month, increasing opportunity as we're building housing, increasing community partnerships, and also working to prevent displacement in many of our communities. Again, all part of the framework that was laid out in that community-oriented process. So as the progress report for this year will tell us, 82% of the 1,490 new units constructed or planned for construction are located in what get defined as high opportunity areas. These new homes for families and others will be located in areas with access to transportation, jobs, open spaces, high quality schools, access to services and other amenities. And again, I'll continue to repeat the refrain I brought to you all this morning, that this quite clearly tells us that housing isn't just about building roofs over people's heads, but about giving them access to opportunity out those front doors. And so again, it's so amazing to look at this map and see the manifestation of some of the work that community members brought forward. 25% or 373 of the 1,490 units that will be purchased, constructed or planned are also located in areas that are at high risk for gentrification or for displacement of communities. Again, those two things are both important, and they're both important to pay attention to in different ways. And so I appreciate the sort of multiplicity of goals that happen in both, you know, building in high opportunity areas and paying attention to where folks either are or would like to stay. There's also 100% of the projects also include some level of permanent supportive housing units. And then that wasn't part of the original framework, but you know, as we have progressed over time in the last few years, was something that we were able to bring into the work in conjunction with what's happening here in the Affordable Housing Bond Measure, and really ties to much of the other work that's being done in our community right now around permanent supportive housing. The next piece kind of talks about the increasing in equity in contracting goals, both in hard and soft costs as we go through spending on projects. The Bureau raised its equity and contracting targets for these affordable housing bond measure projects with a goal of reaching 30% of the hard construction costs for utilization of certified disadvantaged minority women, emerging small business, and service disabled veteran contractors, exceeding the city's typical goal of 20%. The Housing Bureau also established a new target of 20% of those types of contractors for the soft or professional services contracts, such as architects, surveyors, and engineers, and other folks that provide services. The Bond Oversight Committee is pleased to report that all of the projects that are in construction are on track to meet, and in several instances, greatly exceed the Bureau's targets for hard and soft costs in the equity target goals. One example of this is in the project, the Crescent Court, which is the first project that's anticipated to complete construction later this month. And it's on track to exceed those targets, achieving 33% for hard cost construction contracts and 36% for professional services contracts with DMWESB SDV contractors. And in my final slide, again, part of that framework around increasing opportunity, particularly for communities that have historically been under-resourced or underserved. We've had the opportunity through the affordable housing bond measure to make progress on increasing access for those, what we termed or set as priority communities in that framework early on. And this has been accomplished through alignment of services with a whole range of community partners and folks that are involved in our system of care for our neighbors experiencing houselessness. 2/3 of the projects that are funded through the bond have partnered with culturally specific agencies, such as the Native American Rehabilitation Association, or NARA, Native American Youth and Family Center, NAYA, Families en Acción, and the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, or IRCO, that help provide supportive services and referrals through their communities. A very, I think, important part of how we can be intentional in creating greater access to the units that we're building and the opportunities that we're creating. And I know that Amy Thompson, I think, is here from NARA to talk with us more later about the work that's happening there. So additionally, again, the supportive housing developers that are working here have partnered with other clinical mental health and addiction service partners, folks in our community like Cascadia Behavioral Health, Central City Concern, LifeWorks Northwest, and New Narrative. So many of the providers that we rely on in our community to provide those services. So with that, I will turn over the next part of the presentation to my colleague, Susan Emmons.
Okay, my name is Susan Emmons, and I am also a member of the Bond Oversight Committee, and I'm also currently co-chairing Metro's Supportive Housing Services Committee. I retired from Northwest Pilot Project in 2016. I was there for 31 years, and I've been involved in housing and homeless issues since 1978. I use she, her pronouns. Very happy to be here today. So transparency and collaboration with community partners are among our guiding principles. The Oversight Committee ensures housing stakeholders in Portland communities are kept informed and have opportunities to provide feedback. And I think in our community, we often talk about transparency and collaboration. And I would say it's been remarkable to me, the collaboration that I've experienced. And I would say of all my years in this field, this is the best committee I've ever served on. BOC meetings are open to the public and include time for public testimony. PHB staff attend stakeholder group meetings such as neighborhood associations and planning and advocacy groups. And I think that collaboration with the community, between staff and our committee, it's also felt very collaborative to me as a member of this committee. We're very free to ask questions, make suggestions. They respond to us. And we've worked through this together, and that's felt so good to me. Over the past year, we've been receiving briefings from project development teams about the projects, some of them scheduled to be opening this year. Included in these presentations are community partners and nonprofits that will be providing supportive services to the people they move in. And it's been very moving, I think, to all of us to witness the amount of outreach to the community and neighborhood groups when you hear these presentations and the willingness of the project team to alter some aspects of their project in response to suggestions from the community. Through alignment with homeless service providers, culturally specific agencies, and other community organizations, we have worked to create housing for those who are disproportionately affected by our housing crisis. And this includes communities of color, families, including families with children, immigrant and refugees, and intergenerational households, households experiencing homelessness or at imminent risk, and households facing displacement. And then the next slide. As of 2021, we have two projects that are providing affordable housing to Portlanders, the Ellington and East Burnside apartments. Demographic data is collected at least annually to track how well bond projects are serving the priority communities outlined in the framework. In the senior disabled category, we are working closely with Home Forward to have these two categories disaggregated for both properties in our next reporting round. And at our February Bond Oversight Committee meeting, we learned that close to 60% of the people in these two buildings have an income of 30% of median family income or less. In other words, the poorest of the poor in our community. Beyond the statistics are some incredible personal stories, how this housing has transformed the lives of families, seniors, and disabled individuals living there. For one family at the Ellington, it's the first stable housing they have ever had. Their child was really struggling before they moved into the Ellington and is now thriving in his school. Can you imagine what it was like for the single mother who had been homeless with her two children to move into the East Burnside apartments where they have their own washer and dryer in their apartment? Every one of these apartments is precious to the people living in them. And then the next slide. Demographic data is collected at least annually to track how well bond projects are serving the priority communities outlined in the framework. In comparison to surrounding census tracts, the Ellington and East Burnside have a higher representation of African Americans and Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, and a lower representation of Hispanics or Latinos, Asians, and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders. In 2022, each project will update its affirmatively furthering fair housing marketing plan to increase housing in the bond's target communities. And the last thing I'd like to share with you is a quote that I shared at our February Bond Oversight Committee from someone. I walk around the city and I talk to a lot of people and meet people who've been housed. And this was a woman who'd been outside for years. And she shared a quote from Maya Angelou that I had never heard. "The ache for home lives in all of us, the safe place where we can go as we are and not be questioned." And I feel strongly that this housing is answering that quote and making it and making that quote possible for the people being housed. And now I'm going to turn it over to Annalise.
Thank you so much, Susan. Good afternoon, Portland City Council members. My name is Annalisa Curler and I use she, her pronouns. I am a Portland Housing Bond Oversight Committee member and I work for Metro. Thank you, Susan, for that beautiful quote and reminder of why we are here and what we are trying to achieve. I have the pleasure of talking about a slightly different but very critical component to this work, which is fiscal accountability. It is the third focus of the report that is before you. And we know that it is absolutely critical to the work of the Housing Bond Oversight Committee. And it is something that we take very seriously. You'll see from the slide in front of you that the bond dollars that are spent are very clearly tracked and they are separately tracked from other expenditures at the Portland Housing Bureau. You'll see that as of December 31st, 2021, nearly 43% of the funds have been expended, which is very exciting. Additionally, about another almost 35% of funding has been committed. So these are funds that were committed to the projects that were awarded funds in 2019. And you will see this total likely decrease over the next year or two as the projects request disbursement of these bond funds as they progress in construction. The totals for reserved and remaining funds continue to change throughout this past year as more projects achieved financial close and did start construction. As you'll see on this slide, the total reserves at year end was actually $0. This was reduced from the $5 million given that all the projects were in construction and there was no longer a need for reserves on the committed project. Projects. In addition, there is an independent auditor, Harvey M. Rose Associates, that are currently in the process of completing a financial audit report for the July 1st, 2020 to June 30th, 2021 fiscal year. I am now going to turn it over to Todd, if you would please move forward on the slides.
All right, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Todd Struble. I use he, him pronouns, and in my professional role, I am the Community Development Director at Apano Communities United Fund. And I have the pleasure of serving as the chair for the Portland Housing Bond Oversight Committee. It's my absolute pleasure to actually talk about looking forward and why Portland voters approved this bond, which is new units opening up and housing families. So looking forward to 2022, we have six buildings opening up and you can see the numbers there, but I'll go ahead and read them. We're opening 587 affordable units throughout the city in 2022. And for some context, PHB as a whole will be opening 841 new units plus completion of a rehab. So for the specific numbers for the units, 138 units at Crescent Court in April, 50 units at High Utilicum in July, 110 units Cathedral Village in August, 48 units at Emmons Place, South Building only in September, 141 units at Los Adelitas in October, and 100 units at Starlight, formerly known as the West Wind, by the end of 2022. And next slide, please. And then looking forward, so 2023, we'll have four more buildings opening with 93 units at the Aurora, 66 units at the Joyce, 120 units at Anna Mann House, and 160 units at Powell. So yes, we're all excited for all these things opening. And with that, I'm happy to transition it back to Tanya. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Next slide, please. I will just conclude our BOC's presentation by letting you know that the Housing Bureau has continued to build upon the progress that we've achieved in 2021 through the release of a solicitation to award the remaining bond funds. We committed funding to three new projects earlier this year. The new projects, shown on the map here as orange diamonds, further exceed the production, equity, and programmatic goals of the bond policy framework. And we'd like to conclude our report today with remarks from some of our partners whose expertise, partnership, and projects highlight the goals and achievements of Portland's housing bond. So first, I would like to welcome Dr. Rachel Solotaroff, the president and CEO of Central City.
Before we introduce our fine guest, Commissioner Hardesty, I think has a question on the slide deck, maybe sure. Of Todd, possibly.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. And my apologies for interrupting, but I don't want to lose this thought. When we say these are our housing units, what do you mean when you say that? How many of these are owned by the city and how many of are going to be owned and operated by community nonprofit partners?
With the exception of the Ellington and the East Burnside apartments, all of them will be owned and operated by our nonprofit and for-profit development partners.
So that is a really good clarification because we say our affordable housing units, and as someone who's been on the Board of Human Solutions for 14 years, I know how difficult it is for community nonprofits to gather together the money. So I just think we need more clarity in the language that we use, because if we say these are Portland's units and they're actually The community-based organizations have gathered most of the resources to build them and operate them. I think we just kind of don't send the right message. So thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you. I will again welcome Dr. Rachel Solitaroff from Central City Concern. She's going to share some remarks on their work.
Great. Thank you so much, Tanya. As Tanya said, I'm Rachel Solitaroff, CEO of Central City Concern. I use she, her pronouns. And thanks so much to Tanya, to the mayor, city commissioners, and to Shannon Callahan for the opportunity to talk with you briefly this afternoon. At a real high level, because of this housing bond, 238 homeless and low-income households will find a new home this year at the Starlight and Crescent Court Apartments. So first, a little bit about Crescent Court Apartments. This is new construction happening at Southeast 115th and Division, and it's scheduled to open later this month. This is a partnership between Central City Concern and Related Northwest that will create 138 studio to three-bedroom apartments for low and very low-income families, communities of color, immigrants, and refugees. Seven of these apartments have specifically been designated as permanent supportive housing for those who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. And to support these folks, Crescent Court will include a range of services to help its residents succeed, including CCC supportive housing services, as well as services specific to immigrant and refugee families through ERCO and after-school programs by the Boys and Girls Club of Portland. And next is the Starlight, which I can actually see going up right here from my window. This is new construction that will replace the former West Wind building right up at Northwest 6th and Flanders. And that will open this fall and create 100 new studio and single room occupancy units, 70 of which will provide permanent supportive housing for individuals experiencing chronic homelessness. CCC is thrilled to be partnering with the Native American Rehabilitation Association and CCC's own Amani Center to offer culturally specific programming at the Starlight for Native American and African American individuals. And this one's particularly close to my heart as CCC has been partnering with the city on this kind of housing for more than four decades. And we're so excited to be opening such critically needed, low barrier, deeply affordable and supportive housing in the neighborhood where we also provide healthcare, substance use treatment, mental health treatment, and employment services. So that concludes what I have to tell you today. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Now I'd like to welcome Amy Thompson, who's the Director of Housing Services from the Native American Rehabilitation Association.
Hi, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I am Amy Thompson and I use she, her pronouns. And I just want to talk a little bit about NAR Northwest programs. We provide culturally specific clinical services for Native Americans and Alaska Natives and anyone in need. Our services include medical care, dental care, substance use disorder treatment, and mental health treatment. We serve children, youth, families, single adults, and elders. And we also offer supportive services throughout our programs, and that includes permanent supportive housing programs. So NAR Northwest is really honored to be part of three of the new housing bond projects, Hyutilixim, the Starlight, and the Joyce Hotel. Through multiple partnerships with these projects, we will be able to provide supportive housing services to nine families and 40 individuals who are currently living on the streets without housing and who are requesting culturally specific services for Native Americans and Alaska Natives. So NAR will have staff sited at each of these three projects who will work with those residents. They'll provide connections to medical and behavioral health services through NARA or through other healthcare agencies. We'll build connections to culture and community and connections to income stabilizing resources such as vocational training, support employment programs, or assistance with applying for disability benefits. NAR staff will also provide on-site skills training, ensuring households have the support that they need to successfully transition from the streets into housing. And we will collaborate with property managers and other partners to ensure housing stability for those households. NAR housing staff work from a housing first perspective with a strong focus on providing the supportive services needed to maintain housing and connect households to all those additional resources I just mentioned. And this also includes connections to cultural services that help individuals and families engage with their communities in a safe space. Such services include individual and group counseling, support groups, traditional arts and crafts groups, specialized medical care, and consultation with elders and other cultural advisors. So I just want to say thank you very much to the Portland Housing Bureau and the City Council for the opportunity to be here today, and also to all of our partners with these important projects, and especially for the opportunity to be part of the solution to ending the homelessness experienced by so many Native Americans and Alaska Natives and other vulnerable individuals in our community. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up, we're going to hear from Laura Golino de Lovato, the Executive Director of Northwest Pilot Project.
Hi, thank you, Tanya. Hi, Mayor and City Council members, Director Callahan. Good to be here today. Thanks for the opportunity. And happy to see Susan Emmons here as well. When I joined Northwest Pilot Project in 2016, the work on Emmons Place was underway and had been going on for a couple years. At that time, it was called the Alta, as you can remember, maybe some of you. And it was really a promise for multiple units for seniors who were low income, with a built-in promise for the very low income seniors at 0 to 30% AMI or less. The excitement about the project when I joined a pilot project was just palpable here at the office. My then new colleague, Bobby Weinstock, filled me in on the project, and my predecessor, Susan Emmons, gave me more details about the history and relationship with Northwest Housing Alternatives, who is the developer partner on the project. One thing that stood out really clearly to me was that pilot project partnership with NHA, Northwest Housing Alternatives, was solid and had been so since NHA's founding, with a shared alignment on values and a vision for providing decent, permanent housing for low-income seniors that was affordable to them. The values-based partnership buoyed us through multiple hurdles in this project, and we're delighted to be on track to place residents in the building this fall. The project will allow pilot project to place 30 extremely low-income seniors, many formerly homeless, into permanent supportive housing studio units. The supportive housing services measure made new funding available for rent assistance and case management services specifically for these residents who are all at 30% of or less of the AMI. We'll be providing PSH services to clients, including intensive case management, referrals and connections to specialized services, connections to healthcare services, as well as transportation, food boxes, and services like housekeeping. Pilot Project's new PSH program will provide two case managers to Emmons Place residents, and will each work with about 15 residents. Our case managers will be available to clients, to the property manager, the on-site manager as needed, with our historical responsiveness being a high priority. Services will be ongoing for as long as the clients need them and will adapt to the client's changing needs. A key part of the PSH case management services pilot project will provide will be building and maintaining strong relationships with the seniors we serve. Pilot Project is so grateful to the City of Portland and the Bond Oversight Committee for this funding, and is particularly grateful to the late City Commissioner Nick Fish for seeing to it that the building is now named Emmons Place in honor of my predecessor, former NWPP Executive Director Susan Emmons, and her late husband, David. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we're going to hear from Ernesto Fonseca, the Executive Director of Hacienda Community Development Corporation.
Thank you so much, Tania, and I'm glad to be here. Well, you know, I was invited to share a little bit more about what a project that everybody already knows a little bit of. You know, it's really exciting that since my arrival, which yesterday it's been 5 years that I became officially the CEO for Hacienda CDC. And those 5 years have been really transformative for me personally and for the organization as well. You know, one of the biggest projects that we tried to undertake was the Sugar Shack. And, you know, they were talking about doing a McDonald's, a Dollar Tree, you name it, a number of things. And then clearly I don't develop McDonald's, I don't develop, you know, Dollar Trees. And my focus became, you know, housing, which is what I had been doing in Arizona for many, many, many years. I am happy to report that, you know, today I want to share quickly just a couple of images to give you, again, an idea of where we were and where we are today. So this is what I was invited to visit a couple of times during two interview processes that I went to. I was, you know, tour, and I'm sure Mayor Wheeler, as well as the rest of the council, had a chance to see this. We visited some of these rooms. Everything was really, really not so great. Eventually, this is where we are. Let me see if I can move this image. And this is what is becoming today. You know, it is a massive transformative project for that corner. It is no longer a strip club, which used to be the largest in the state of Oregon. It is going to be 142 units altogether. Take a moment just to observe and reflect on this image. It is not going to only transform the lives of those people that are going to be living and dwelling in this property, but it's going to be transforming the quality of life, the image, and the understanding and perception of the people that live in Northeast Portland, in Cully in particular. All of this work, you know, wouldn't have been possible without the support of the many. But I want to say thank you to our mayor, as well as the rest of the city council. I want to say thank you to Molly Rogers and our director, Shannon Callahan for the Portland Housing Bureau. All of them, you know, not only were fantastic partners into helping us, you know, move this project forward, but also thought partners to help us understand what could be the best, you know, financial structure to make this project happen. So I am proud to be part of this community. I am proud to call Portland now my home. I am proud to be part of many of your lives, you know, in and out, in regards to politics, in regards to community development, in regards to moving this organization and this city forward. And I am looking forward to really continue expanding our relationship in more than one way. And I hope that this is not the first nor the last, you know, project that we see in Northeast Portland that will have so much impact. With that said, you know, as everybody knows, I had some remarks, you know, put together, but reading for me, that doesn't happen in front of a camera. So I'd rather not trip too much and say what I'm feeling right now. And I'm feeling very, very grateful for you guys welcoming me after, you know, a little bit of hazing at the beginning, I have to say, you know, Portland style, very kindly and very gently, takes time to develop that trust. But I am very, very happy to be here with all of you. And looking forward to more together. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ernesto. And now we're gonna hear remarks from Andrew Colas, the president and CEO of Colas Construction.
Take it away. Thank you, Tanya. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. I want to, in particular, really thank the Bond Oversight Committee members for all the work that you do, you have done, over the years, and really have created an incredible model for us all in your tireless dedication to this community. I'm gonna talk today about the 3000 Powell project. It's a project that we're building. Home Forward is the owner of the project in partnership with the Portland Housing Bureau. Wanna thank Commissioner Ryan and Shannon Callahan for their leadership in making this project come to fruition. A common theme to what Ernesto just talked about, we're replacing what was an eyesore in the Southeast Portland community, which was a strip club that was just a complete eyesore, non-productive asset to our community. with an incredibly beautiful asset that's going to house over 357 individuals and family members, 206 units. It's a highly sustainable building focused on, when I talk about sustainability, I talk about all three pillars of that, and that's social, economic, and environmental. I think a lot of times people only focus on the environmental side. I always like people to refocus on the social and economic side. I'm first going to talk about some of the environmental elements of this building. There are so many, I won't be able to list them all, but this building will have solar panels. It will power multiple elements of the projects. There will be EV charging stations, highly efficient building envelope system. There'll be green spaces and trails that allow the youth that are going to be growing up in this beautiful building to be able to play and enjoy the environment. There'll be playground elements as well. We have a very efficient heating and cooling system, which is very important to these buildings, as we saw the heat wave that hit us last year. So that's going to be an important part of this project. Now I want to focus a little bit on the social and economic factors of sustainability that this building brings to the table. So over 350 jobs will be created throughout the course of construction. And these are high paying, high wage projects. Personally, are self-performed. We're self-performing the concrete on this. Over 80% of the employees on our self-performed crew identify as women or representatives of the BIPOC community. That's huge for a structural concrete crew. And then high levels of participation from both BIPOC and MWSB firm. I use both terms because I think it's important to differentiate. A lot of the subcontractors that we work with aren't necessarily COVID certified in the state. And a lot of people don't realize that COVID or MWSB certification in the state of Oregon, 76% of the firms that are certified are white-owned firms. So the program that was created to create opportunities for people of color, 76% of those businesses that are certified in our state are white-owned businesses. So, and a lot of the firms that we work with, you know, from the Black community and the Latinx community, aren't necessarily able to get certified. Some of those certification processes from the MWSB side, the MBE side, you can't be certified, for instance, as an MBE firm if you have a green card, but you can pay taxes. So we have to think about those elements, and we have to think about how these programs that we look at don't always actually help the communities that we're trying to. So as a company, Coles Construction always wants to focus on all of those elements and really dig deeper into it. And I'm proud to say on this project, we've done so, and we have high levels of participation. This project was the largest building project ever to be awarded to a BIPOC prime contractor. That's our company. And I say that BPCs, it's important because, again, we talk about 30% and 20% and 10%, but we don't talk about the prime contractors that are leading these projects. And the reason that is important because this project has another first, and a lot of people would be surprised to think about it. But when you drive around the city, when you drive around the state, how often every day do you pass a tower crane? Probably on a daily basis, you see a tower crane. Probably throughout the course of your life, you've seen multiple tower cranes every single day of your life. This is the first project in the state of Oregon that's Black-led to ever have a tower crane on it. Now, that's significant because it's not only a visual piece that each and everyone sees us every day, but it also shows that in order to have a project with a tower crane, it has to be large. You don't have tower cranes on small projects, which means that from an economic development standpoint, you're seeing businesses get real opportunities. Now, it's exciting and it's progress, but at the same time, it's sad. I've done a lot of research and found that in the state of California, there's never been a Black-led firm to have a tower crane, and the state of Washington, it holds true as well. So while we see this as progress, we all have to understand that while progress is important and it signifies change, and change is important to the youth, we all have a lot of work to do. The amount of emails, texts, calls, letters, I got like handwritten letters from people that are in different states about the significance of seeing a project of this size, of this stature, that's really impacting our community. And this all is because of the emphasis that the Portland Housing Bureau, the leadership there, has put on economic development. So we're not only building this affordable housing that's going to allow youth throughout the state to grow up in quality homes and a quality environment and go to good schools, but we're also at the same time doubling down on the economic footprint that these projects represent, that these bonds represent, because we have to remember that these bond dollars come from all people from all communities. These are our taxes. I pay taxes, you all pay taxes, every element, every individual of every background in this community pays taxes. So it's really important that we're looking at the economic development standpoint of this. And it's really exciting. We have a lot of work to do. This can't be the first tower crane. It has to be the first of many more to come, but we have to all continue to work hard to make sure that we strive to make the economic elements of this community even better. But it's a very good start. And I thank Commissioner Ryan and Shannon Callahan, director, for giving me this opportunity to talk a little bit about this really important project. Thank you.
Congratulations, Sandro. That is great, actually. I've been looking at it and watching it very closely. Congrats.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Those are all of our guests that we've invited to share remarks with you all today. And so that concludes our report from the Bond Oversight Committee. We're happy, really pleased that we're able to join you all and share our progress with you all today.
Thank you. That was an excellent report. We all appreciate the testimony and the thoughtfulness that went into it. And we appreciate the effort that everybody's put into the success of the housing bonds. This really truly is exciting to see something where it's truly green across the board. And all of you are to be congratulated. Colleagues, I don't know if there's any comments or questions at this point. If not, Keelan, could we also check and see if there's anybody who'd like to testify on this report, please? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, co-chairs. Thank you, everyone who provided testimony today. It is clear that people have had their sleeves rolled up and have been in it up to their elbows and trying to address housing for some of our most vulnerable community members. And each of you individually and collectively have played such a huge role over these last 4 to 5 years. Andrew, I know your dad, and you know I know your dad could not have imagined standing here today having this kind of conversation with this city council because of the challenges he experienced as a Black man trying to be bodacious enough as to start a construction company in the city of Portland. So always I want to pay homage to your dad and appreciate the journey that he's been on and you've been on in the I won't say how long I've known you both because then it would imply all of us are really old. Let me just say it's been wonderful watching the journey and the success of the journey. And I want to thank each of you. Each of you provide a very unique kind of housing for some of our most vulnerable community members. I heard Ernesto talk about optimism. And Ernesto, I'm normally the most optimistic person on the planet, but when I see the need as compared to what we're able to provide, I just don't know where to dig into that well of optimism at this moment. I feel like we're drowning in a lack of quality, accessible housing, not just for the chronically unhoused, but for even working people in this city. And so I feel like we focus all our resources in like 0.1% of where the need is. So help me be optimistic that we are actually on the road to providing housing for everyone in our community at a rate they can afford and in a way that is dignified. Because from where I sit at this moment, I am not seeing that path.
That's a complicated answer for me to give during this Zoom meeting, Commissioner Hardesty. I do agree with you that there is a lot that we could be feeling grim about, but at the end of the day, you know, I try to make the best decisions that I can with the information that I have, and also make the greatest impact that I can with the resources that we have. The resources that we have is what we have, and we're trying to do everything that we can in order to move that needle forward. I do understand your point, and I also see, you know, that there is a lot of dismay with the lack of resources, with the many people that we're trying to house, with the many people that are completely unhoused, and yet, you know, that is upsetting many, and the most affected, you know, have little voices. But we have to continue moving forward with everything that we currently have. And I cannot avoid to think that I have to be grateful, I have to be positive in order for me to be as effective as I can.
I really appreciate that, Ernesto. And I certainly didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you were the one that mentioned optimism. And so I traditionally am optimistic, but I also feel like unless we do something significantly big and different really soon, that we'll be here next year having this conversation under more dire conditions and still not have a path forward for all income levels to be able to thrive in this city. So I'm preaching to the choir because each and every one of you see what I see. And I know, I guess for a Colas Construction, there are people that say you're an overnight success. And I know that for 30 plus years, your company has been working really hard. I think what I'd like to know is, how has your business been able to grow? Because again, I started with the story of your dad, but you are now a bona fide majority contractor, and you're doing a whole host of both housing and commercial space. And I think if there's hope, there's hope in us having this opportunity to be building a next generation of contractors led by Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and other people of color. So thank you for being here, and I'll stop.
Yeah, just to
thank you, Commissioner Hurd. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just to add to the one point that you said, like, it's true. It's not an overnight success. We've been in business over 25 years. I can name three of my peers that have been in the same element that have been in business for 10 years less than ours, that their revenues are twice as large as ours. So it has not been easy. But to your point, I think when you face barriers all the time based on your complexion, you have to have optimism. You have no choice. I think to your point about my father, he celebrated his 74th birthday yesterday. And growing up as a little kid, every single tower crane around this town he pointed to, he told me, whose tower crane is that? How much revenue do they do? How many employees do they have? And he always said to me, if you don't know your competitors before they know you, they'll never be your competitors. So I think that I would say to you, because I can understand losing that optimism, that we have no choice. We have to love this city. We have to continue to invest in this city. And I think a big part, the previous 30 years of affordable housing development, there was one contractor that had 95% of that business. One contractor. You're talking about billions of dollars, right? You're talking about retained earnings for over 50 years, right? So you haven't seen this investment in the Latinx community. You haven't seen it in the Black community. You haven't seen the Native American community. You haven't seen the Asian Pacific Islander community. If we're going to really holistically change this, our city has to focus on these local businesses that are doing the work, that are employing people, that are employing people from communities of color, so that we can get out of this cycle. Until we really start focusing our dollars on these results, so that we don't look at one crane, but we look at 50 cranes, we're not going to get there. But I remain optimistic, and I appreciate my elders for the work that they've done to pave the road for me. And I know that I have a lot of work to do. So continue to be optimistic, even in the midst of very hard times, because I love this city. We all love this city, and we're going to get the city to where it needs to go.
Thank you so much for that. That warms my heart. Both you and Ernesto are giving me hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Mapps.
Mr. Mayor, I have a couple of questions, but I do remember that you asked to see if there's any public testimony, and if there is public testimony, I'll hold off on my questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. There, no one signed up.
Okay, great. Let me open by just thanking everyone who presented today and everyone who participates in this project. This is a great example of a
very good. Keelan, do we have public?
Of a effort that is, Mr. Mayor, I don't think we have any public testimony.
Excuse me for just a second, Commissioner Mapps. Mayor Wheeler, you may want to turn over to Commissioner Rubio because you seem to be having some sound issues.
Yeah, why don't I do that? Commissioner apologize. Broadband issues. I tried turning off the video to see if that would help, and it doesn't seem to be.
Okay. So Commissioner Rubio is in charge, and I think that we don't have any public testimony, but we did have some awfully powerful testimony today. And I want to thank everyone who made time out of their lives to get us to this moment. A couple of just quick questions on this very impressive work. One of the things that really jumps out to me is the fact that we seem to be exceeding our goals in terms of bringing on new affordable housing. Certainly, if you have my job, one of the things you hear all day, every day is how difficult and expensive it is to build in Portland. So I was just wondering if someone on the committee could share with us what you have figured out that the rest of the development community is still struggling with. How did you bring these in under budget when that's such a hard thing to do? And I see Director Callahan turned her camera on, so maybe she has some insights.
Commissioner Mapps, thank you for the question. The affordable housing that is sponsored by the Portland Housing Bureau has priority permitting access through the Bureau of Development Services. In addition to the great and talented teams that are working on the developments with the different construction companies, architects, et cetera, we also have on staff architects who work to ensure with our development partners that these projects meet all of the very specific city requirements that they need to meet so that they can move forward as rapidly as possible. That said, there are often, just as in the private community, unexpected, either issues with historic code, environmental issues on sites, thinking particularly of 30th and Powell. I know how challenging that site has been with the topography that they're dealing with. And then, between the great development teams and the staff at PHB, we work very hard to make sure that these projects, as much as possible, are able to move forward, dealing with rising, obviously, especially during the pandemic. We've all dealt with a series of issues related to construction in terms of labor pricing, materials pricing. But it's really been a combined effort of our teams, as well as all of the project sponsors and folks you see on these calls. It takes a lot of folks to move these projects forward. So hopefully that answered your question a little bit, Commissioner Mapps.
It sure did. And I might just keep you on the line. I have a couple of other quick questions sort of along the same lines. So certainly I think something which most city bureaus are facing right now are, and every Portlander, you don't have to be a city program to face this, is inflation. And so as we head into the next year of building affordable housing, do we have any previews in terms of how inflation is likely to impact the cost of the stuff we hope to build over the course of the next year?
You know, Commissioner, we are very aware of both labor and materials costs, not just inflation, but there's also been some, frankly, wild swings with materials, be it steel, concrete, wood, has unexpectedly gone up over the last couple of years. So I think that's why you saw in our slide deck, we actually built project reserves for our projects to make sure that we could move them forward. We were very fortunate with the first 10 projects to move into construction, that there was also a federal tax credit fix that happened at the federal level that that actually helped us leverage more resources for these projects. But you know, where we could be seeing anywhere to 10 to 20% cost escalations, I think, on the next wave. I think that one of the things that our teams do very, very well, though, is look to see what alternatives exist. So if they can do something that still meets the quality that we're looking for, we'll look at alternative projects. Also, I know that our developments order materials as soon as they can. So they'll have an elevator delivered 9-10 months before they even need it, just to make sure they have it on the site. So it is a very, very labor intensive process from our nonprofit and development partners, as well as the Bureau's team. But I would say it's very difficult for us to predict with any certainty what new materials. And I don't know, Andrew would probably be best suited to answer what he's seeing in real time right now with construction material pricings. Andrew, did you want to comment?
You're going to put me on in regards to escalating prices, cost escalations? We have to deliver enough bad news as it is. I think Shannon hit it all. Really, there, obviously, we all know there have been commodity issues as a result of COVID. And then obviously what we're seeing is that's rippling because we have this, you know, war that started. So all of those elements impact projects. I think that at the end of the day, when you're working with good project partners and good project teams, really what you have to do is project as best as you can the future. And you have to create pools and contingencies that are responsible going into projects like this. I think we do that in the other partners that the Bureau works with, they do the same. It's been very difficult. I mean, we all know that. And then, you know, that compiled with labor shortages in general, it's just the perfect storm. But at the end of the day, we're in a business where that's our job. So I think all the partners that the Housing Bureau works with, we have really good partners over there. We just have to do our best to predict and to make sure that we deliver.
Thank you. And impressive work. And everyone's struggling with this. A couple more quick questions kind of along the same lines. And I might, Andrew and the director might be both in a good position to answer this one. I noticed that you're also doing just a really good job in terms of minority contracting. This is something which, you know, every city bureau, especially infrastructure bureaus, struggle with. Any lessons learned for how to be successful in that realm? Like, why are you doing so well when so often we struggle to get to 20?
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. The way we do affordable housing is slightly different than the RFP process. So our developer partners work to bring on a contractor and a contracting team. So it does not go through a public procurement process, which does have some benefits. We prioritize and ask all of our projects to at least meet 30% on the hard costs. And we look at that when we're selecting projects. So when a development team comes forward and they say they're going to meet this target of 30%, we look back and look at their history in how they have done in the past. It's one of the factors that we use to actually select who is going to be the owners and operators. One of many factors, of course, we're also looking at who is a good owner and operator in terms of providing that stability to those who live in the housing. And then, you know, the other thing that we've done in cooperation with Prosper Portland, and in particular for the housing bond projects, is we have hired NAMAC to work with each and every one of the teams. So they look at all of the different places, not just at the contractor level, but in all of the different subs and workers, with every project team to put together a specific plan to help increase the numbers where they can. So they do individual assessments and talk with each of the teams. And we feel that money has been extremely well spent, and that getting ahead at the very beginning of these projects, from how we select them to breaking down all the different ways that we can bring on different contractors is extremely important.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. And there might be some lessons learned for me and some of my other colleagues who deal with minority contracting issues. Maybe 1.5 questions left. So I think this the bond brought in 1,490 units last year, something like that. Do you know how many multifamily units were built in the city total? Are we a big players in this space, or are we small players in this in the apartment space?
You know, Commissioner, I was just looking at permit data for units. There were 30, I think we're over 3,000 units permitted in the last year. Starting in this fiscal year, we're well over 3,600. We have been a pretty big player, especially during the downturn, with 1,859 units of just Portland bond housing. So I would, before I give you an off the cuff percentage, I would wanna go back and double check, but we are a significant part of the development pipeline for for housing in Portland.
Right. And one last question, and then I promise I'm going to be quiet for a while. So as I understand it, the Housing Bureau helps create affordable housing through two main tracks. One, we have the housing bond, which we're talking about today, and the other would be TIF dollars. And I'm just wondering if these are there significant differences between the two? Like if I had looked at cost per unit, minority contracting, would these things look very similar? Would those two pots look very similar, or are they very different programs? Muted.
Thank you, Commissioner Maps. We actually, TIF housing bonds, and we also have some federal resources and other smaller portions of revenue. All projects that have been going on at the same time would have similar profiles in terms of MWESB contracting. Our goals are the same for all funded projects. The one difference that you will see, I think, in Portland bond projects, as opposed to some of the tax increment financing projects, is you'll see a deeper level of affordability with Portland housing bond projects. And that is because we had a commitment of a significant number of project-based vouchers from our local housing authority. So we always look to maximize the number of deeply affordable those units from 0 to 30. But with Portland housing bonds, we've been able to go further because of vouchers that are also being attached to the unit. So I think that would be one area of significant difference.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate those answers today.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I want to say again, what an incredible presentation and what great work is being done. I'm looking at the total development cost for bond project, a document that was part of the presentation. And what I know is bond cost pays a percentage of most of these projects. And so I'm a bit confused by the question and answers that Commissioner Maps asked and Shannon Callahan responded to. When I look at this page, we talked earlier about who owns and who's developing and who's maintaining these properties. And it looks like the bond dollars provide some assistance, but other than the two properties that we own, we are just a small piece of the funding package. Is that an accurate statement, Director Callahan?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner Hardesty. We are an important and part of the package. without the dollars coming from the city, these projects would not move forward. So, but yes, we are able to leverage and our partner teams are able to leverage an incredible amount of resources, sometimes taking on private debt where a project can support that, but many times, especially with these deeply affordable projects, taking on additional debt does not make sense. But LIHTC, low-income housing tax credits, is the primary source of leverage. But I can tell you right now that but for the Portland Housing Bond, none of these projects would have been able to move forward. And I can say that with some certainty.
Well, with all due respect, Director Callahan, as someone again who served on a board of a nonprofit housing developer for the last 14 years, I know each nonprofit has to cobble together a whole host of funding pieces in order to build deeply affordable housing. So what I'm just trying to do is have clarity. What is the city's role and what is the community nonprofit role? Because we intermingle it in a way that is confusing to the public. I understand how vital any additional funding is, whether a bank puts it up or the city puts it up or Metro puts it up. I understand that piece. But what I'm trying to understand is the housing bond that voters passed have provided a percentage of funding for most of these projects that are owned by community-based organizations. And yes, and they may or may not have been able to build it without the housing bond, but I don't think it's appropriate for us to say these are our units when we're just a tiny piece of the funding. It's an important piece, but all the other pieces are important too. It amazes me how much toothpaste and sticks nonprofits have to use to actually make these deals get to the finish line. But what I'm trying to make us all use, words are powerful. So I want to make sure that we're using words that have the same meaning to you that they have to me and to the general public. So I appreciate this conversation. And again, my hat's off to everyone who's done really an incredible job through a pandemic, through a worldwide racial justice movement, through all the crises that we've experienced. We're gonna have some housing for some very lucky Portlanders who have not had that experience for a while. And I don't wanna take anything away from that. I just wanna, that's 0.1% of the need. And I just don't want us to get lost in the fact that the need is so great and what we're doing is good and it is gonna help a small group of people. But the need is significantly more than we've been able to collectively as a city, county, state, region, been able to handle thus far. And I just want that to be on the public record. And again, taking nothing away from anyone here today. So thank you all. Appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Commissioner Harvey. Commissioner Mounts.
This is more of a statement and an invitation for, I think, this council to have continuing discussions about how the affordable housing market here in Portland works. I share some of Commissioner Hardesty's concern about how we reach an equilibrium where we can deliver enough housing for that people can afford for the people who live in this town or hope to remain living in this town. I think earlier this week, we saw a report from Eco Northwest that seems to indicate that single family rental homes have been decreasing, I think in 90% of the census tracts in the city of Portland. So single family homes that are rented out by a bunch of people, which is kind of where I found my housing when I was a young person in this town, is on the decline. In fact, if you take a look at those trends, it seems like 30 years from now, the concept of renting a single family home in Portland just might not be a thing anymore, which is just a very different world. It's kind of the exact opposite of, frankly, what I think of Portland. You know, a lot of us grew up in places with yards and garages, and part of that was part of the charm of Portland, which actually makes the work that's being done here all the more important. If the future of affordable housing in our city is really this multifamily projects that we're seeing today, It's a big shift. I think I'm definitely trying to figure out how this new world works. I want to say this presentation that we saw today is really uplifting in many ways, because we see how you folks have managed to exceed our goals in terms of bringing new housing online and meeting our equity goals. I believe one of the things we also learned today is that the Housing Bureau plays a really important role in this space. I think we brought on about, 1,500 units this past year through the housing bond. I think if you take a look at housing that's brought on through our TIF expenditures, maybe that's another 900, I'm not quite sure. So about half of the new apartments being built in Portland appear to have at least some sort of city role. So we definitely play an important role in this space. I just don't know how we scale from where we are today to where we need to be. I look forward to Commissioner Ryan's leadership in helping us explore this space. And certainly he and his team have done great work, but it also seems that we have much more work left to be done. And thank you. I don't know if anyone wants to respond to that, or if that can just be whatever it is.
Okay, is there any further council discussion? Anything further from our presenters? No? Okay. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Sorry, Madam President. I move that we adopt the report as presented.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Great, thank you. Keelan, can you please call the roll?
Ryan.
Yes, well, thank you to the Housing Bureau staff that put this report together, and you facilitated this session very masterfully. I really appreciate you, Tanya, for stepping in. And I just want to thank the Bond Oversight Committee. This was a really good presentation, mostly because people really were speaking from their heart and their head both. And I really enjoyed the comments and questions from my colleagues. I have the pleasure of doing that offline more frequently. And so it was really wonderful to watch that. It's a collective effort. But all of you, Alan, Susan, and Emmons, thank you for all your service. For you to say that this is the best committee you've served on is a very powerful statement, because I just have a feeling you've been on a lot of committees in your career in Portland, Oregon, and it is the city that meets. So Annalisa, I really want to appreciate you and Rachel. Rachel, you bummed me out recently with some information that you gave me, but we're all going to work with you closely as you continue to serve us before your, I'm in denial about the fact that you might be moving on, right? So then also, God, I hope that was a public already. Amy, thank you for your report. I saw the NAIA property on 42nd recently and met some of your colleagues that are doing behavioral health work at the building, had a great conversation with them. And it was one of those moments where it's like, you just want to have more conversations like that. You want to know that there's more people providing those services in housing. And they offered some anecdotal information that was very compelling, as people on the ground always do, as you know. Laura, Ernesto's two pictures, did they tell a big story for everybody? And Andrew, again, the fact that that story that you tell about your father, the Cranes, is just so inspiring. I hope you tell that to youth when you connect and mentor youth out in the community. Anyway, that was just a very inspiring dialogue, and listening to your presentation was an honor. We all know the COVID-19 pandemic has brought along unprecedented challenges, not just in Portland, but everywhere. And I just want to say that the way that you're all dealing with supply chains, increased production costs, the emotional financial tolls, it's just a lot. And as somebody that is trying to lead some efforts to do some construction of our own with the villages, I'm actually really so aware now of all the red tape and the challenges that you face like never before. And so in my short time in office, I think I have a lot of empathy for what you all go through. This year's report does highlight a lot of progress though and achievement. I think everybody noticed that today. And I really appreciate that we had dialogue about the gap, because I think we do need to have more information about the denominator, as you would, of what the need is and then what the gap is. And that would be real goal setting would be, eliminating that gap is what I think I'm hearing from Commissioner Hardesty. And so it's great that we're doing the outputs, but if the input of need keeps going up, then it's just this hamster wheel that we're chasing. And I think everyone knows that, so it's okay to just say that out loud. But this year's report does show a tremendous amount of collaboration. And that's what we got to experience today. The fact that you all know each other quite well, because you meet and they're the best meetings ever. And the fact that you are represent different sectors is really important, because that's what it does take. And so I have some more notes here, but I'm trying to get through them because everyone is late. This program is definitely one of the many steps that we're taking as a city to align our priorities and create permanently affordable housing in very underserved areas. I thought the map that showed the geographic reach was one of the more inspiring things that I've seen in a while. I'm well aware, again, how important it is to have geographic reach and having it close to mass transportation. So I want to end with really thanking the voters and those paying the property taxes to fund this mission critical work. We can't thank them enough. At a time when those are going up and services feel like they're going down, we have to lift up the generosity of our voters and our taxpayers. This is really complex work. And the fact that the nonprofit partners figure out how to pencil this out, Commissioner Hardesty referring to her service at Human Solutions, is a compelling story, and all of you can relate to that. But your relationships to your communities is the key to these investments, and they have an impact on individuals and families who are in most need and too often aren't seen by our traditional government system. So if we didn't have the partners on the ground, we wouldn't be serving the people whom we really do need to serve. And I want to commend the Housing Bureau for continuing to reach deeper into that network. Anyway, I look forward to welcoming all these new units of stock that is affordable, and I'm really enthusiastic about accepting this report.
Hardesty.
I want to thank the co-chairs of the Bond Oversight Committee. You have done fabulous work of holding us to the letter and the spirit, the values, and the heart of that ballot measure. It is clear with your passion and your commitment that you tried to push the envelope, which means we got more units than we thought we would be able to get through this process. And the fact that you not only still like each other, even though you have no money left because you've already committed it all, and you're still smiling about the ability to work together to make these really critical projects happen, I just want you to know that I am grateful that you volunteered your time, your energy, your spirit, your heart to make these projects a reality. I want to thank the Portland Housing Bureau, Director Callahan, and your fabulous team. And again, I, as someone who has worked and looked and set up at night because one funder fell away and you're looking for how do you get that last piece of funding, I understand how difficult it is for nonprofits to get to a place where they have enough money that they can confidently go to the bank and say, let's break ground. It is a hard, tedious process. I have been there a lot of times, and I've always been amazed that the development director at Human Solutions somehow is able to pull it out. But I know the magic is having a developer that is grounded in community, and I can't think of a construction company more like Colas Construction that was born and bred from community and understands community and its DNA. It takes a developer to create opportunities to create truly affordable housing and having those models so that we don't have to go out of state looking for them in our own community is precious. I hope all of you will continue to work with Commissioner Ryan and I and every member of this council, because guess what? We need new ideas, because if we keep doing what we've always done, we're going to keep getting the same results. And I am proud of each of you because, I know what it takes to get these projects to the finish line. I'm glad the city was a partner and a player, but certainly not the owner and leader of these efforts. And we should be a partner and a player, but not a owner of community efforts to create housing people can afford to live in. I'm very happy to accept this report and vote aye.
Maps.
I want to thank Commissioner Ryan, the Housing Bureau, and the Bond Oversight Committee for their excellent work on this important project. This is some of the most important work being done in the city, and you are truly a model and an inspiration for all of us. For these reasons and more, I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to thank Commissioner Ryan and also thank the co-chairs and the members of the Bond Oversight Committee for this report and great presentation and all the thoughtful and impactful work that's been done by each one of you. Also Director Callahan, the Portland Housing Bureau and all the community nonprofit housing partners. It's truly impressive work that's happening. I'm also thrilled to see that these projects have exceeded the 1300 unit goal. In fact, all of the goals the conversation we had was also very good because we all understand that we still have a long way to go. And if I heard correctly, it was 82% of the new and upcoming units are located in high opportunity areas. And that's also very important. And also that these projects have been unapologetic about pursuing more meaningful participation with BIPOC firms and contractors. And then finally, I just want to say, you know, thank you and appreciate all the service providers and housing providers for doing just what Commissioner Hardesty said, putting together those packages that can be very stressful and grueling, but you do it on behalf of community. Because you're ensuring that these critical community-centered approaches are practiced in each one of these projects. And having these culturally specific and community-centered housing and supportive services are critical for people to be able to retain their housing. Rachel, just want to throw in there, I'm so sorry to hear that you're going to be leaving us. I just adore you. I don't feel like I got to spend enough time with you in these roles. we've known each other for many years now, but it's wonderful to be able to connect with you in this different way. So thank you so much for all of your service. And again, everyone, thank you for the tremendous impact you're making on behalf of people and families. I'm happy to vote aye, and Mayor, I'm also happy to turn the gavel back to you.
Wheeler.
I'll accept that in the final yard here. Thank you for filling in. I was having some bandwidth issues there, but I hope you can hear me now. This was a wide-ranging discussion today, and I really appreciate it. On one hand, I feel a little badly for our community members who we probably held about 45 minutes longer than we said we would. On the other hand, it was a really important conversation, and it really gets to the bigger picture of the struggles we're having around affordable housing. But for the moment, I want to pull back and talk specifically about your work, which was the Portland Housing Bond. And I think that the city, and I mean the city writ large, should be able to take a bow on this one. We are very critical of ourselves. We're critical of the work we do. That tends to be the nature of people on this city council. But when I look at the Portland Housing Bond from the beginning to the end, I see it as an unmitigated success. And that success thus far is largely due to your efforts as members of the Oversight Committee. I want to just throw a little bit of history here. This success is built on many years of work that preceded any of our terms here, any member of this city council. And it started really as an idea in the community, then started as a collective effort to get the public to support the idea of affordable housing. The bond was overwhelmingly passed by the voters in the city who saw the good intentions behind this and believed that we have the wherewithal to carry it out and be responsible and accountable with the bonds that we issued. Some of the bond folks who actually did the issuance in our finance division, people who are largely unsung heroes, managed to get very good financing terms for those bonds, which allows us to squeeze out a little more than we had anticipated at the beginning of the project. Initially, it was community members who helped scope how we were going to actually spend those proceeds. And Director Callahan, I have to give you a shout on it, out on this, because I just want to remind people how much crap we took for slowing down the process for a few months so the community could speak to what their needs were and what they wanted from this housing bond. And what we heard from those who are the most likely to benefit from the deployment of these bond dollars was that they needed very low income housing and they needed more family size units. And we slowed it down in order to not only respect those needs, but also to put in some geographic goals as well. And there were a lot of people who were angry about that. And they said, well, you need to deploy these dollars as quickly as you possibly can. That's what accountability looks like. And we said no, and you said no, Director Callahan, and the community members who provided us the guidance and the oversight also said no. They said, no, we want to slow this down for a few months and we want to get it right. And I believe we did. And here we are all these years later. And what we have is on every one of the metrics that we promised the taxpayers, you have exceeded the goals. And that's been done hand in hand with the members of the Oversight Committee. So the way I see this is this community is coming forward, identifying a need, figuring out how to address that need, establishing standards and benchmarks for how they're going to achieve that need, and then beating every one of those benchmarks, at least up until this point. That to me is a definition of good government. That's how it's supposed to work. It's a partnership. We provide the technical assistance and the support, professional leadership. The community works to define its own needs and how it wants its tax dollar resources spent. And this is what they prioritized and how they prioritize that are being spent. So I feel very, very good about the Portland Housing Bond, and it's something we as a city should all be proud of. I also just want to say that I know you'll keep us on track. That's your job. You're doing a good job of this. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate the work of our citizen volunteers. To the larger issues, we'll talk about all of those things. Commissioner Mapps, I agree with you. There is no policy that we pass that we should not revisit and evaluate and ask ourselves, is it working? Is it working the way it was intended? And as you pointed out, there was a study done by Eco Northwest, which raises some serious concerns in my mind about the RELO ordinance and whether or not it is achieving its well-intended goals. And if it's not, we should fix it. And I know there's been discussions around other policies that this council has passed in years past. We should never be afraid to listen to community engagement or questions about accountability or whether or not we are spending tax dollars as wisely as we possibly can. But for here today with regard to this committee, thank you. You guys are on the ball. I vote aye. The report is accepted and I can't wait to hear more because it's fantastic. Thank you. With that, Keelan, I think that's all we're doing, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right, good. Everybody have a great afternoon. If you can get outside, you should do it. It's a beautiful, beautiful Portland day, and we are adjourned.